I wasn't necessarily taught that by my parents. I don't think it gets taught in, mainstream education and some of that like financial literacy. And so like, looking back at the journey, that probably might have been a smarter, maybe faster way to build that passive income up
Yeah.
and have it to the point where it's like, hey, hun, like you don't have to go to work next week. You can if you want, but you don't have
Yeah.
to. And it's nice for us to have that option.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the Five Talents Podcast. I'm your host, Abel Pacheco. I interview the top commercial real estate investors and industry experts so you can learn from their experiences. So if you're an investor, a high W-2 earner, or real estate or tech sales professional that wants to invest in real estate without having to manage properties or leave your day job, then this podcast is for you. Or if you're already investing in real estate, but you're doing it part-time and you want to become a full-time multifamily or full-time commercial real estate investor, this podcast is for you too. You're going to learn a ton. You will learn from real-life multifamily investors and other professionals in the industry. They're going to share their blueprints for success, and I'm super excited that you're here. So I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, hello. This is Abel Pacheco, your host for the Five Talents Podcast. We are super excited today to have another yet amazing guest, Mr. Sean Katona. So Sean, thank you very much for joining, brother. How's it going?
Dude, excited to be here. I like this. It's like raw, real, uncut on Facebook. And then we're going to push it out to all the platforms, man. You're going to be writing a book on this stuff in a minute.
That is awesome. We're trying to do it as, so that other people can learn from us. And we're not selling, that's for sure, is how to go stream, how to go virtual, how to do that web presence. We're trying to get after how to show people how to invest for financial freedom. So you all have to just bear with us. You're absolutely right. Raw, uncut. Hey, man, the expertise is in real estate, not this part, but hopefully you'll enjoy all of it. Yeah, that's awesome. So let me introduce Sean, because if you don't know who this gentleman is, he's somebody you want to get in touch with, you want to reach out to, and you want to learn more about, which is why I'm trying to, bring him up as our guest here, because he has got just a tremendous background from tech all the way to commercial real estate. So as soon as I heard Microsoft, I go, man, I know we've got a similar background. He's a commercial real estate landlord today. He does triple net lease deals. Shopping centers is what he fixes. So he fixes broken shopping centers, makes them or increases their value, and then helps investors all the way through it. And he spearheaded about 75 plus deals from renovation to new build. So he has got a tremendous background, and we are very humbled and appreciative that he would join us on the show. So Sean, let me turn it over to you, my friend. In your own words, tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do, and we'll just start a great conversation, man.
Yeah, this will be fun. So I guess to give anyone listening a little bit of context, my journey, it starts out like probably a lot of people's corporate America. I was working at Microsoft for many years, and then EA Sports after that, and the world of media and advertising sales. But as I started to save up a little bit of money, I'm going, hey, what should I invest in? And I was drawn to real estate for, I think, a lot of the reasons that you are as well. I saw the opportunity to cash flow, to have properties appreciate in value, to have tenants help us pay down the loans, to build up more equity. And then there's a lot of cool tax advantages. So I didn't know in the beginning a lot of the things that we love to take advantage of today, but I got started about a decade ago, kind of fumbled my way through a rental property turned accidental flip. Didn't work out quite as intended, but it got start, the journey started. And then, did another deal after that. And, kind of slowly it blossomed into something that became an interest to do full time, which is a whole other discussion that we should have, by the way, full-time versus part-time and a lot of the things that come along with that. But I went full-time into real estate investing in 2013. And like you mentioned, that's been probably a little over $20 million in acquisitions, everything from single family flips to rentals, to wholesale deals, to out-of-state turnkey rentals, to commercial projects. Now, like you mentioned, shopping centers, I've invested with some friends in apartment buildings. We have a little bit of a mobile home park in portfolio now, some self-storage. So I've
gotten
all over
to
the
see place,
kind of
man.
A wide variety.
Yeah, you definitely have had a wide variety of stuff, man. So that's just that's an amazing background, amazing track record and run. So before we kind of get too far into the real estate side, your tech journey, I heard Microsoft. What were you in? What kind of role did you have?
Yeah, it was like every young man's dream. So I went to work within kind of the Xbox ecosystem.
Yeah.
And we would sell brand placements to a lot of the movie studios, the foreign automotive companies here in greater Los Angeles. And so they would be organically integrated in and around the intellectual property of the game. So imagine, you know, putting Gatorade into Madden football or the Nissan Juke into NCAA football and things like that. And so we would be doing brand deals and essentially product placement like they do in Hollywood, but the video game version of that.
And we'd always every young
play,
man's
play video
dream.
Games, know them well, and
that is
articulate
every young
that value to advertisers.
What in the world? And how long was that run in general? Gaming, all the fun stuff.
Yeah, that was about 7 years in the industry. And so there's definitely some overlap between corporate America and my real estate investing. But I went full time in 2013. And so I'm about a decade of investing under my belt now.
Right. That's freaking awesome, man. So along the way, when did it change to you doing deals for yourself? And then when did it change to helping other people get invested?
Yeah. So I think after my second deal, I ran out of money and that kind of slowed me down from being able to buy more projects. And I sought out some coaches and some mentors and say, how do you keep going, you know, without just using your own cash? And so they really taught me about, you know, bringing in other forms of debt and equity and learned how to have private lenders participate in house flips or go use techniques like hard money or bridge loans. And so that allowed me to continue to grow and scale without just using my own capital, which has become basically my favorite thing. Like what I focus on today is almost exclusively bigger projects where we always have partners involved. And my thought process on this was, I'm willing to do fewer, bigger deals, higher quality real estate, better economies of scale, and I may not own 100% of it, but I think everyone who does own it is going to have a better experience than kind of the mom and pop route. And so much of the brain damage that we can go through when you're the jack of all trades, master of none, right? You're finding the deal, you're managing the construction, you're the property management company. Like there's so much that goes into being a landlord or running an investment or a house flipping company or a rental property company, you name it. And I think certainly in the beginning, I just didn't know all the things I didn't know, kind of ignorant.
Yeah. I like that. Fewer deals, bigger deals, and then partners leveraging them. And then now exactly what you mentioned, as those things pop up, right, in real estate that you're not quite sure how to handle, I think the bigger deals really do account or allow for other partners with expertise, other people that you can rely on, professional, whether it's contractors, property managers, the lawyer side of it, it's a bigger piece, a bigger pie. And so everyone can kind of fit in where they get in. And that's the team sport part of it. But that's what I've experienced. Have you felt the same or?
Yeah. I mean, couldn't agree more because like the vast majority of those things that you mentioned, I'm so mediocre at. I was joking with a friend, like as soon as I pick up a hammer, I'm probably going to lose money. and so I think, you know, you and I have kind of had a similar probably journey and epiphany in some ways. It's like, man, my time is really best spent finding another great deal to buy and working through brokers and working with motivated sellers and structuring a deal. And I probably pass on 99 out of 100 projects that we look at. But
yeah.
Those ones that I do buy they're, you know, diamonds in the rough. They're unicorns. Like some people might say it's the deal of a lifetime. And it's not easy to reproduce those results, but we can do it when we do it all day long, every day. And we're looking at as many deals as we do.
Yeah.
And we're talking to as many brokers as we are. And we're doing things with our marketing to, you know, put ourselves in front of some unique opportunities where we can go solve problems for owners or for properties. And by fixing some of those problems, significantly increase the value of properties. That puts, you know, our investor partners in a position where they can make outsized returns that probably wouldn't be possible otherwise on a retail deal or some of the stuff that might be openly marketed, where, you know, the bidding is making us operate on much thinner profit margins. I think one of the reasons I love what I do today is it's nice fat profit margins, so it leaves a nice room for error if something doesn't go absolutely according to plan, like a pandemic or the credit markets tightening up or you name it, construction overruns or things taking longer, which is, it feels like the norm in construction. So a lot of things there that I experienced the hard way over a decade of investing that kind of led me to my thesis today.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome, man. So your thesis today, why don't you, let's take a moment here and really tell us about maybe like your latest project so we get a good feel of what this means to buy shopping centers or triple net lease deals, and give us something you're working on today, and I'll just kind of maybe work backwards a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So like the most real-time one right now, I just bought on Christmas Eve. So what are we, just a little more than 30 days into ownership here. But It was a shopping center in Phoenix that was 66% vacant in a pretty good trade area. So it has the fundamentals that I would look for: good traffic counts, good visibility. And you look at it and you're going, this could support more tenants. This might be able to land a name brand tenant. There's some things that, the previous owner group was not doing that I think, might help to elevate the look or the feel or the desirability of the building. So we'll go in and, we just finished our new parking lot. We've got a new monument sign that's in production right now. We'll repaint the building. We'll do some things to kind of spruce up the facade. You might say putting lipstick on it, but the things that make it feel like a 2021 building versus one that was built in the mid 80s, structurally like good bones, but it was looking a little bit tired. So we're doing that. And then, the hope here is that we fill up the vacancy in that building. And when we do that, it should nearly double the net operating income of the building, which, the nice thing about commercial is NOI and the value of the property are very closely correlated. So as we do that, this particular deal has the potential to almost double in value. And the deal that I did before that was very similar, 50% vacant, filled it up. We were able to sell it for about twice of what we bought it for about 14 months prior. And so that's what I look for now, those fixer-upper deals that are underperforming, that are in, sound areas, neighborhoods, like check all those boxes and make sure that we're going to have a clean, clear path to, pro forma and being fully occupied and leased up.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, congratulations on that one. And I hear double the value. That's amazing. I heard you say another statement, which was your first deal that made you the most money was a shopping center. I think I've once or twice on Clubhouse, we'll give that a shout out, which I definitely want to talk with you a little bit about social before we wrap up. But what led you to that first big deal? And, how did you fall into it? How did you find it? What steered you towards that? And, just tell us a little bit about that too.
Yeah, good questions. And maybe some lessons there for anybody listening or watching.
Yeah.
So kind of rewind a few years ago, I, really was hitting a nice stride with my house flipping business. And there was one summer where I had about 15 rehabs going simultaneously.
And that sounds like a project management fun time to be in.
Yeah. I mean, the long and the short is that I really started to feel like an adult babysitter kind of when it came to the contractors. And it was just like, man, I'm getting hit with a change order every other hour. Things are running behind schedule. Projects are going over budget. And look, it doesn't take, your construction budget going over 10% and then missing your sale price by 10%. And then, selling a month or two later with the carrying cost of hard money to gobble up your profit margins pretty fast. So between just having the chaos of all that construction management and then losing a lot of money on two back-to-back deals, I just took a moment to stop, reassess and say, hey, is this what I want to be doing? Do I want to continue to scale and grow a flipping machine? Or wait a minute, the reason I got into this business in the first place was to create passive income and have, my money working as hard as I am. So let me think a little bit more about how to generate consistent, reliable, predictable income. I'd been building a rental property portfolio pretty steadily, but when I sat down and did the numbers, I was like, shoot, I'm going to have to own 20, 30, 40 houses for this to be an interesting amount of money to live off of. And, at the same time, I'm getting introduced to some people doing bigger deals, and I kind of see how the commercial world works a little bit more. You do the numbers, you understand the economics, you go, hey, a couple commercial deals in portfolio could get me the same result as 20 or 30 houses, you know, with one loan instead of dozens, and one roof and one set of, you know, electrical and plumbing to manage. And I just really like the nature of commercial more, fundamentally very similar, right? I'm going and buying fixer uppers and we're forcing appreciation and increasing the value. We were just doing it with, you know, essentially an extra comma and more zero. And that was everything, right? That's the cash flow, the appreciation, the loan paying down, and the tax advantages were just amplified. So that's become one of my favorite sayings, is like this business is like what you see on HGTV, just with an extra comma and more zeros behind it. And I think you know, people kind of get the idea pretty quick.
Yep, man, that's freaking awesome. I 100% agree. I think everything you said. I didn't hear anything that I'm like, no, nope, that's not right. No, 100%. We have so many similarities. It's funny. So I bought single family houses for 10 years, right? However, 1 year I tried to do 10 deals in 1 year, and exactly the same thing you mentioned. You know, I felt like a babysitter, and, you know, in anything in my single family, I'm like, I don't understand why the contractors can't get after it. I'm not saying there aren't great contractors, just the ones that I ended up choosing were the ones that I ended up having to work with, you know, just really heavily, intensely. And I go, well, you know, I just didn't understand how you could just miss on timeline and budget and or your holding costs, your carrying costs, hard money loans, interest rates. You're like, whoop, there it goes pretty quickly. And it doesn't take you once or twice to realize, okay, got to figure out something different. We try to buy 10 houses in 1 year. I think we got 8 or 9 transactions kind of under our belt. And that's what really, really, you know, solidified. I'm not going to build a flipping machine. I'm not going to build a funnel for single family houses. Well, I had built one. I'm going to tear some of this stuff down, right? Yeah, for the most part. And so anyways, that's kind of the mindset there. Which what led me to commercial and which led me to doing syndications. So helping other investors now through it. So that's awesome, man. Along this path, let's talk about this passive investing journey or opportunity rather that other people can have. So you have somebody like Sean, who is now 10 years into the business, who's seen the small, who's seen the big, who can now leverage expertise, really great partners, really great fundamentals of how to buy right, how to have a low basis, how to force appreciation. And now we have the ability to invest with someone like Sean. So he does all the hard work. Well, fortunately, we don't have to do any of that hard work. Sean or somebody like him can do all this work for us and invest with. So let's talk about how you help, you know, passive investors. And I think this may illuminate a little bit this opportunity through syndication that we all have. Hello, hello. This is Abel Pacheco, your host for the 5 Talents Podcast. After listening to a few episodes, deep down, do you know that multifamily and commercial real estate investing is one of the best ways to create financial freedom? If you said yes to that question, and you are where I was a few years ago, then I'd absolutely love to connect with you. A few years ago, I started personally consuming a ton of real estate education. I traveled all over the country, as many real estate conferences and seminars that I could go to. I took 200 plus hours of real estate education. I spent thousands of dollars along the way. And I did this because I knew the path to financial freedom for me and my family was through commercial real estate and syndication. So if you've made a similar decision, I'd love to connect with you. And potentially in the future, I'd love to partner with you as well. Take a moment, go to 5tcre.com/invest, and I'd love to set up a time to talk.
Yeah, so even back in my residential projects, I was, you know, working with friends and family to basically let them lend money like the bank would. And so instead of paying a bank 6 or 7% interest, you know, I would pay friends or family 8, 9, 10% interest. And we'd have their money out for 4 months during a house flip, and we'd pay them back, you know, all their principal plus interest. And so it was a good way to make some good returns for anyone with, you know, six figures sitting in their checking account or six figures sitting in a self-directed IRA. It was nice short-term loans. You know, they were able to hit double-digit returns typically. And I think that resonates with a lot of people when they understand it, not to mention that it's secured against real estate. So that's kind of the world of private lending. And then over on the commercial side, because the numbers are more interesting, I think people can have an ownership stake in our deal. So they own the building just like I own the building. We buy an LLC and they have a proportional share of all the same things. They've got their proportional share of cash flow. They've got their proportional share of that equity buildup from the loan being paid down. When we bump rents every year by 3%, which is baked into my leases, you know, that appreciation that happens with the building, they're directly benefiting from as well. And then the tax advantages, especially on bigger deal, are just, it's crazy how awesome they are. Yeah. And probably most people don't understand that unless they're in this world. I know I certainly didn't hear about it probably for the first 5 years of my journey. And so, you know, for anyone listening, it would be great to ask their CPAs or their tax professionals about depreciation, paper losses, phantom losses. And then, you know, Abel, you and I do things that are a little bit more sophisticated, like a cost segregation study, where we can accelerate the depreciation, the paper losses on a building, kind of move that forward and essentially zero out some of the income that we might be, we're actually getting the cash flow coming in, but on our tax returns, it looks like zero income. So you're then paying nothing on that income in taxes. And in some scenarios, depending on an individual situation, they might be offsetting other income. And so, you know, we had this scenario, I think you did too. I heard this on a Clubhouse where, you know, because, you know, my wife had paid something in taxes in advance, we ended up getting a lot of that money back because the paper losses that we had on buildings that we owned offset some of that income. And so it's like the stuff that people heard way back, you know, years ago when folks were poking holes in Trump's tax returns. Like, well, he's got all these buildings that create all this paper losses that create, you know, this, a situation where he's got next to no tax liability. And so it's very much the same case, you know, for what you and I are doing on maybe a little smaller scale, but when we own multi-million dollar assets in portfolio, those generate some amazing tax advantages for everyone who has an ownership stake in those deals.
Yeah. So awesome. What a great few bullets on summary. So I'm trying to take notes and think about my own examples. That's it, man. That's the private lending. You started with some of your investors first for single family deals. That's how someone can do 10, 11, 15, 50, however many deals you want to try to juggle in single family world. Have a few investors, pay them either some points. They're either debt or equity partners. The difference is if somebody gives you money and they're on a debt side, they're not owners, but they're taking interest percentage for some people are trying to figure this stuff out, right? Or they can be equity partners in a single family deal as well and lend some money on a flip. It's probably, you know, you're getting less or no points. It's not really an interest percentage thing. It's more of a percentage of the deal. And there's advantages or disadvantages to both of them. But either way, when you're in a single family deal, the pie is much smaller and the tax benefits are reduced. And it is subject to exactly everything we were just talking about in the single family world, right? So you're invested in one. And the returns on a multifamily or commercial asset or commercial vehicle like Sean is doing in his area shopping centers or our multifamily deals, when we syndicate them, they're equity owners. And so we're creating limited partner passive investors that own a piece of the deal. Now, because they're owners or your owners, if you're listening right now, you're an owner in a limited partner passive deal, which means you have a K-1, you own a piece of a business, you get these amazing tax benefits. And exactly what Sean mentioned, I'm no CPA and you know, you need to talk to an advisor. I think Sean said it right. However, let me just kind of illuminate why, because on a single family deal, an IRS, they give you a tax schedule where you can basically depreciate an asset for like a rental property, whether it's a single family house or quadplex, you can depreciate it, but the schedule is 27 and a half years. So if it's $1 million, you can take a little bit of loss every year for the next 27 years. It takes you a long time to depreciate everything. But the benefit is some of this commercial stuff is we can do a cost segregation study, hire an expert, in other words, hire an engineer. They do all this crazy, you know, 100-page report, and then out comes the schedule for the IRS tax man to say, hey, oh yeah, we can squeeze 27 years down to 5. And now all of a sudden we've got this massive tax loss for those that are listening. And that's what we're looking for. So anyways, all those things are amazing benefits, Sean. So maybe even let's just keep talking about this for a few, if you don't mind. Well,
and I mean, you brought up a good point. Like when someone thinks about it, and we were at the situation at the end of 2020 where I was kind of scrambling to get another deal done because we'd had a good 2020, we had income. And so we were getting ready to write a check to Uncle Sam, but because we invested in a couple different commercial deals, it really lowered our tax liability. And so, you know, if you think about the ability to do that year over year and compound that and add more assets into portfolio, that can grow to become a pretty compelling number. And so I really think about that a lot now. And I would urge any of my friends or family to, too, is, you know, you heard that saying, right? It's not about what you make, it's what you keep. And so that's the probably the biggest expense of our lives, right? Is you're paying Uncle Sam. And so if I'm in a situation where I've got the most tax advantages possible because of the asset classes that I'm investing in, you know, rather than writing that check to Uncle Sam, I'm investing in a deal now, or that's lowering my taxable income. So that really can start to add up. And it should be, I think, accounted for in your total return on investment. Like, you know, we might get a decent cash on cash return, but then you add that to that loan pay down, and then you add it to the equity that's appreciated, and you're looking at your balance sheet. You're adding what you might have otherwise paid in taxes, and you start to see how we can easily get into some of those double digit returns. And I think you and I aren't promising or guaranteeing those types of returns to anyone, but, you know, looking at kind of what's typical for projects that we've done in the past and anything that I would buy today going forward, I'd say, hey, there's a pretty clean and clear path here to hit some pretty compelling double digit returns for everybody who's involved in the ownership.
Yeah. The factors, when everyone's got these like Excel spreadsheets. I know this is what I personally did when I was running in a single family, and I did this for a while. I had my Excel sheets and I was doing my analysis to see, you know, what was my purchase price? What was my ARV? What was the increase of appreciation over the past several years in my particular market, submarket? I'm doing all this math. I'm doing all these cash on cash returns. Oh, this is my return. This is really good, right? What I didn't factor in any of my sheets was the taxable part of this investment. If it was quick and it was capital gain and I didn't live there and I didn't hold it for a long time, then I got hit with active capital gains. And those capital gains are like quickly 15 to 20% of your profit, you know, in depending on your own tax, you know, bracket. And again, talk to the experts, but are like, well, I didn't account for this 15 to 20% off my profit. What the heck happened? And what I didn't account for pleasantly on the multifamily, at least my syndication side, and same thing on your side when you do the cost segregation study and accelerated appreciation, I didn't count for accelerated appreciation, which put this like huge 30K check in my pocket the first year that I invested 100K cash into two separate deals. And I just didn't account for that. And I was like, well, almost if you missed the deal and my deal did not perform, I have an extra 30K in hand that's real. I can invest it again. And that would have, you know, if I would have factored that into my return, it would have skewed it wildly in the favorable as opposed to the unfavorable for single family. But yeah.
You know, what's really cool too, you made me think of this is anyone who's kind of listened to real estate investing or, you know, some of the forums or big podcasts out there, they've kind of popularized this idea of a BRRRR, right? Buy it, rehab it, rent it, refinance it.
Yep.
Repeat. And we're kind of doing the same thing on commercial, right? Again, extra comma and more zeros. So in an apartment, you're doing some things to bump rents and tighten up expenses and increase the NOI and increase the value of the building. But similar thing on a shopping center, we buy it, renovate it, lease it up. We can refinance, pull out in some cases, you know, almost or even all of the initial cash that we have into a deal and get into one of these, hey, no money down properties that's in portfolio. And when we pull money out through a refi, it's not a sale. It's not a taxable gain. And so that's tax-free money. You're increasing your debt load a little bit, but if the asset can support that, say, hey, we just added a building to portfolio. We returned capital to everyone who put some of the down payment money in. And now we get residual returns on this for, you know, the foreseeable future. So that's something that I love, because you can do it over and over and over again. And really the only bottleneck to that is finding, you know, good deals that you can buy at the right price at a good discount so that you can do that force appreciation. So that's why, you know, one of my main metrics became project has to have, you know, close to 50% upside so I can do just that.
Buy it,
refinance it, pull out some of that down payment and move on to the next one.
Great fundamentals. And what markets are you in, Sean, today?
So I live in Orange County, California, Huntington Beach specifically, but I invest exclusively in Phoenix right now. Well, I should say I'm actively investing in Phoenix. So I'm looking at shopping centers in and around that area because I already own there and I've already transacted there. And so I've got a little bit stronger of a resume, of a bio, and you know, I'm starting to be presented with deals that, you know, maybe a beginning investor wouldn't. You know, brokers know me now, they've seen the track record. And so a lot of the stuff that I look at today is off market, pocket listings. You know, there's a lot of reasons why it makes sense to continue to focus on a single market. It's, you know, we've got lender relationships there now. We've got vendor relationships there now. We know a lot of the folks who are representing tenants, the landlord brokers. And so I think, you know, the subsequent deals just get easier and easier and easier. And I'm seeing the opportunity to make even better returns probably than I have in the last couple of years, which is crazy if you think about the situation that we're in right now. But with all the challenges that, you know, businesses and even landlords have gone through, like there will be problems that need to be fixed. And, you know, guys like us who can go in and do some of that heavy lifting and that hand-to-hand combat that's going to be required to turn around some of these projects. So I feel, you know, fortunate that we can have, you know, friends or family come along for the ride and give them, you know, great returns that I think are hard to find elsewhere.
I love it. Love the model. And the asset class is one that I'm excited for you in or to invest in, because it is absolute need. If you know, I'm sure you're looking at the right types, the right deals, the right need for the time and space, and the grocery stores aren't going away soon. Even though everything is moving to commerce, e-commerce, there's a lot of service businesses that you just can't figure out a way to bring a haircut, you know, versus to Amazon. You can't figure out a lot of service industry, and they're going to come back sooner than later. And then the grocery stores are the ones that I've seen, or just on my level, just surface level knowledge, which is any big box, you know, retailer, shopping center with like the grocery store in the middle and those types of things. And I'm sure there's other combinations that do well, but man, they're still crushing. They're still trucking along, right?
So yeah, I mean, just like real quick, the tenants that I love now is the stuff that is more Amazon internet resistant. And so you're not, Amazon's probably not doing the nails, the haircuts, the dog grooming, you taking your kids to the dance studio, like the service centric stuff. And you know, I think grocery stores have flourished. The dollar stores are on fire right now. So for as much as you read about like blood in the streets and the zombie apocalypse that is retail, there's this whole other category that's flourishing. And so it's kind of, you know, cleansing almost a lot of dinosaurs who haven't adapted to the reality and like consumer preferences today.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, got to adapt, got to keep moving, especially during pandemic, whether you call it pivot or adapting, it's the same thing we've always done through any kind of time and space. And today is a different time and space. So you just got to adapt. Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, with the last several minutes here, before you go, let's do a few things. I want to make sure our listeners, audience, and guests can find you if they want to reach out, maybe potentially look at your asset class to invest in. So please tell us how to reach you and who do you want to contact you? We'll start there. And I got a couple other things.
Yeah. I mean, if you Google me, I'll pop right up. I've started putting, you know, more and more of what I'm working on kind of out there. So, you know, we've got a YouTube channel going now. I'm sharing some stuff on Facebook, Instagram. I love LinkedIn because I'll just connect with everyone there. You can get a really good sense of someone's background professionally. So if you Google my name, I've also got it all linked up on seankatona.com. So S-E-A-N-K-A-T-O-N-A links to all my social stuff. And I mean, what I want more than anything right now is more deals. Like that's my bottleneck, is finding more fixer-upper deals. You know, I'm fortunate that I've got a lot of friends and family who are excited to participate in my next project, but you know, if someone is accredited and has a relationship, you know, reach out, hello, get to know me. You know, I always want to know someone personally before I invite them into a project, but it doesn't hurt to take a look at what I'm working on and how we're structuring our deals. So any of those vehicles on social media are a great way to do that.
Yeah, right on. Thank you very much. And before you go, I definitely also want to talk with you about some social marketing, how you get so much exposure, maybe a Clubhouse conversation or two. So, man, I am super appreciative, number one, that I met you. Now that
we are a Clubhouse connection.
We are a Clubhouse connection. So for those that are not on Clubhouse yet, you should just go Google it and check out some of the videos and probably even look at Sean's LinkedIn on, you know, Clubhouse. This is pretty cool. But super happy we got connected. And I see you now and I go, man, this is the individual to follow. Your video posts and content creation is pretty fire. Tell us a little bit about just you getting some exposure. Is this new for you? Have you always been doing it? You know, why now? Any of this insight, that would be fun for me to learn personally.
Yeah, man, it's been funny because I've been a little shy. Like, I don't put that much out publicly. And I've started to do a little bit more recently. But one of the things that helped me with that, almost be a little bit more open or transparent, was I was getting calls from friends or family members, kind of asking some of the same questions over and over again. It's like, hey, Sean, like you've kind of done a bunch of different types of deals and you've invested in this and that and a few different states. And I've got some money saved up, you know, if you were in this situation, what would you think about investing in? And I was like, huh, I've answered that same question dozens and dozens of times now. Maybe I should record it once and kind of put it out to the world.
Yeah.
And the same thing was happening on the broker side a little bit. It's like, hey, what's your buying criteria? And so, you know, 16 times a week, I'm repeating that back over and over and over again. I was like,
yes,
how about I record this one time and then they can watch it on demand? You know, if it's two in the morning on their phone, criteria. They can see it.
Wow. Yeah.
So that made a lot of sense. And then it's like everything from financial literacy and some of the 101 stuff to understanding, you know, what's happening with the value of the dollar. And, you know, I was in a position where I could go out and invest in my education and coaches and mentors. And so, you know, for the last decade, I've been surrounded by really, really smart, successful people helping me to, you know, continue to scale and grow and take things to the next level. And I don't think someone has to go through a decade of brain damage and scrapes and scars and bruises to learn some of the same actionable things. Like today, if a friend asked me that, I'd probably say, look, I like turnkey rentals in hot markets where someone else is doing the property management for a lot of reasons. And, you know, commercial has some of those similar characteristics where you can have somebody or a third-party property manager dealing with all that, like hand-to-hand combat is how I think of it. The tenant issues that come up or the termites or the toilets, you've heard all the things, but I like having a layer of protection in between the investor and the world out there, because I suspect that most people investing in real estate who've got a little bit of savings are pretty successful at what they do, right? They're earning a good income in corporate America. They're a successful doctor or a dentist or, you know, attorney or whatever it is that's their craft. That's what they're good at. That's what they enjoy. They're just looking to get a return on their investment when they're buying a rental property, right? They didn't sign up to become a property manager or dealing with evictions or all the drama that I think you and I got to experience. But you don't know that in the beginning, right? You don't know all the things that you don't know.
I see a beautiful Insta post on someone's firehouse that they bought and they're like, oh, not firehouse, but a house that was amazing and I got a great return and I saw the before and after, but not the in between.
Well, and I just thought it's like we should make real estate investing more like investing in the market, right? Like you can buy Apple stock, you can buy Tesla stock. If you're crazy, you can buy some GameStop stock. And then that's not management intensive and why not make real estate investing the same way? And so it's like it's taken a little bit of a like a playbook out of like the REITs. You know, you can invest in companies that own hundreds of thousands of units or doors, but I saw much smaller numbers. And Abel, what we're kind of doing is similar, right? People invest and we, as best we can, make it completely turnkey, hands off. It's like it's an autopilot thing where they're just getting direct deposits, you know, once a month or once a quarter or whatever the frequency is, but having to deal with the day-to-day stuff involved in, you know, being a landlord. I don't think anyone necessarily loves to do that. You might have fun for a minute doing the HGTV, pick out some fixtures and some finishes, you know, after you've done dozens and dozens and dozens of kitchens and they all kind of look the same. You can check that off your bucket list.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And the people that, you know, I think we're speaking to, you know, what you mentioned, high earning professionals that have spent 5, 10, 20 years in your profession, and you're finally making really good income on your side, you know, the last thing you want to do is stop that income earning machine and point your time at something that's, you know, you're trading a $200 an hour type of work, maybe $300 or $400 or $500 an hour. And now you're trading it for $20 an hour work. It doesn't make any sense. It took me a number of years to kind of realize that the last year that I did 10, you know, tried to do 10 deals in 1 year, I was at my highest earning potential in tech. My title was, you know, as director. We were doing business at Rackspace, IT hosting. We were doing $57 million a year. I had 60 plus people under me, under my team. I had high performing sales managers, which each had high performing sales executives. We were selling a big name, Fortune 500 kind of entities, and they were making $1 million decisions. And I was messing with this $20 an hour job, which is dealing with a contractor because the material is no longer available, you know, one store, and I don't know how to match it on the other, and they couldn't solve this issue. And I'm like, what the heck am I doing here? You know? Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what led me to say, I need to find a different way.
They knew you on a first name basis at Home Depot, right?
And they blew, yeah. And that's like, hey, I hired the general contractor to do this, but I'm getting phone calls and emails and all kinds of good stuff. And
no, I mean, if you think about it, like from a risk standpoint, like, yeah. Someone can maintain that six-figure income, let's call it, mm-hmm. and just add more and more high-quality real estate to their portfolio every quarter. Mm-hmm. Like you get to that point where all of a sudden your nest egg and your portfolio is generating an entire annual salary. Like the visual I like for people is like, imagine your money, you know, putting on a suit every day and going to work and making money and working as hard as you do. And I wasn't necessarily taught that by my parents. I don't think it gets taught in, you know, mainstream education and some of that like financial literacy. And so like, you know, looking back at the journey, that probably might have been a smarter, maybe faster way to build that passive income up.
Yeah.
And have it to the point where it's like, hey, hun, like you don't have to go to work next week. You know, you can if you want, but you don't have to. And it's nice for us to have that option.
Amazing. What a great conversation. And I'm happy now that you're getting additional exposure and pushing past the limits of being the private individual and sending these updates out and giving some people some extra content to consume. And I'm excited to follow you and hopefully work with you in the future continually and look forward to it, brother. So is there anything else we haven't covered today that you really want to bring some exposure to? Something that you're working on, just really anything in general, something you were hoping I asked and just didn't touch on.
No, I mean, dude, you've been doing an amazing job. You were an inspiration for me, just seeing you running around Clubhouse and, you know, connecting with so many people. I think that's a great opportunity. You know, so many people have been up from Coop so long. It's been fun to connect with like-minded people, other investors, learn from one another, like all ships are rising. So I'm impressed and, you know, absolutely commend you for doing that. Similarly, like I've been blown away on some of the stuff on LinkedIn that you've done. And I think if people haven't seen what you've done there, they should. You inspired me to start doing the weekly update, which is like behind the scenes, right? Like I don't usually let people in my life like that, but I think it's, yeah. I wish that, you know, people would have done that for me in the beginning of my journey. I'm saying, hey, what is someone doing, you know, week after week that's putting them in a position to buy some pretty interesting real estate? And how do you continue to grow and scale? And if someone had told me you could go buy a multi-million-dollar building, I would have thought, well, I need $1 million in the bank, right? Yeah. And that's just not the case.
Let me go to work.
Partnering together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. So there's like some awareness and like, you know, folks like us sharing that with people who are in corporate America, like, you know, doing great work. And the system feels a little incentivized to, hey, keep all the money with, you know, Wall Street, Fidelity and Schwab's and all the big boys have a lot of financial reasons why they want to keep your money in that system. And so that doesn't get widely spread and shared. And there's a lot of reasons why, right? That's paying for a lot of incomes. I wouldn't say I have anything, you know, one thing in particular to share, but what I might express some passion around is people get started sooner, like get in the game, because what real estate has done, you know, for our financial situation, you know, what I've seen from guys like you, Abel, and the folks that, you know, are in my Jedi Council and my mastermind groups, it's just, it's created more wealth for us than anything else that we're doing outside. And it can be completely turnkey and passive when you understand the fundamentals and the economics and, you know, what's going on with the financial system. It'd be crazy for us to not have some sort of exposure to that asset class in our portfolio. And look, I got money in the market. I got money in precious metals. I've got money in some equities, but the vast majority of our net worth is in real estate for a lot of reasons. I think you know all about that.
What a great conversation. I do. And I'm happy for you. Congratulations. Let's keep talking, my friend. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. Sean, you're the man. And again, my name is Abel Pacheco. I'm your host for the Five Talents Podcast. I believe you heard a few things that you got some value from today. And if so, I would encourage you go to Apple Podcast or Google or Stitcher, whatever you're listening on, Spotify, go subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review and a rating. If you think it was fired, do a 5-star. If you think we need to improve, give me a written review and tell me what we need to do. So I appreciate it. I hope to see you at your next show. And then Sean, thank you very much, brother.
Dude, this is a blast. Appreciate you putting it together. And I know this is not for the faint of heart. It takes time to do what you're doing, and, and you're spreading a lot of value for everyone who tunes in and listens. So we appreciate you, my man.
You're the man. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Five Talents Podcast. I'm your host, Abel Pacheco. Each week, we're going to bring you interviews from other industry experts and commercial real estate investors who followed their dreams and achieved massive success. If you enjoyed this episode, then you're going to want a copy of our Passive Investor's Guide, Tackling Commercial Real Estate the Easy Way. It's the guide we use to invest in $93 million of commercial real estate. It's a 65-page ebook. It's a great resource to learn the basic mechanics of multifamily syndications. And we're going to show you how to evaluate your next passive investment opportunity. So if you subscribe to our podcast now, leave us a review and a rating, I'm going to give you a free copy. So take a moment to do that now. We'd appreciate it. And then you can register for the book at 5tcre.com/ebook, 5tcre.com/ebook. Let us know, and we're going to send you a copy. Thank you so much for subscribing to the Five Talents Podcast.